The Holy Rosary, Remedy Against Evils, The Writings of Pope Leo XIII on the Most Holy Rosary, Laetitiae Sanctae, Encyclical of Pope Leo XIII, Commending Devotion to the Rosary. To our Venerable Brethren, the Patriarchs, Primates, Archbishops, Bishops, and other Ordinaries, having peace and communion with the Apostolic See, Venerable Brethren, greeting and apostolic benediction. The sacred joy which has been given to us to feel in attaining the 50th anniversary of our episcopal consecration has been deepened by the knowledge that it was shared by the people of the whole Catholic world, and that as a father in the midst of his children, we have been consoled by the touching testimonies of thy loyalty and love. We gratefully accept it and record it as a fresh proof of God's special providence, and one which is marked full of bounty to ourselves and of blessings to the Church. At the same time, we love to offer our thanks for this signal benefit to the August Mother of God, whose powerful intercession we feel to have been exercised in our behalf. For hers is the loving kindness which, during the length of years and the vicissitudes of life, has never failed us, and which day by day seems to draw nearer to us than ever, filling our soul with gladness and strengthening us with a confidence of which the surety is higher than the things of time. It is as if the voice of the heavenly Queen made itself heard to us, at one moment graciously consoling us in the midst of trials, at another guiding us by her counsel in directing the great work of the salvation of souls, and at another, urging us to admonish the Christian people to advance in piety and in the practice of every virtue. For us it is once more a joy as well as a duty to respond to her inspirations. Amongst the happy results which have been already rewarded are exhortations which were due to her prompting. We have to reckon the remarkable impulse given to the devotion of the Most Holy Rosary. This awakening has made itself felt in the increased number of confraternities instituted for the purpose, the voluminous literature of pious and learned works written upon the subject, and the manifold tributes which Christian art has not failed to bring to its service. And now, as if it for yet another time, listening to the voice of the same zealous mother, who calls upon us to cry out and cease not, we rejoice once more to address you, venerable brethren, upon the subject of the Rosary, standing as we do upon the eve of that month of October which, by the award of special indulgences, we have deemed it well to dedicate this most popular devotion. Our appeal to you, however, will not be directed so much to add any further recommendation of a method of prayer so praiseworthy in itself, nor yet to press upon the faithful the necessity of practicing it still more fervently, but rather to point out how we may draw from this devotion certain advantages which are especially valuable and needful at the present day. The Rosary and Society. For we are convinced that the Rosary, if devoutly used, is bound to benefit not only under the individual, but society at large. No one will do us the injustice to deny that in the discharge of the duties of the supreme apostolate, we have labored, as, God helping, we shall ever continue to labor, to promote the civil prosperity of mankind. Repeatedly have we admonished those who are invested with sovereign power that they should neither make nor execute laws except in conformity with the equity of the divine mind. On the other hand, we have constantly besought citizens who were conspicuous by genius, industry, family, or fortune to join together in common counsel and action to safeguard and to promote whatever would tend to the strength and well-being of the community. Only too many causes are at work, in the present condition of things, to loosen the bonds of public order and to withdraw the people from sound principles of life and conduct. There are three influences which appear to us to have the chief place in affecting this downgrade movement of society. These are, first, the distaste for a simple and laborious life. Secondly, repugnance to suffering of any kind. Thirdly, the forgetfulness of the future life. We deplore, and those who judge of all things merely by the light and according to the standard of nature join with us in deploring that society is threatened with a serious danger in the growing contempt of those homely duties and virtues which make up the beauty of humble life. To this cause we may trace in the home the readiness of children to withdraw themselves from the natural obligation of obedience to the parents, and their impatience of any form of treatment which is not of the indulgent and effeminate kind. In the workman, it evinces itself in a tendency to desert his trade, to shrink from toil, to become discontented with his lot, to fix his gaze on things that are above him, and to look forward with unthinking hopefulness to some future equalization of property. We may observe the same temper permeating the masses and the eagerness to exchange the life of the rural districts for the excitements and pleasures of the town. Thus the equilibrium between the classes of the community is being destroyed. Everything becomes unsettled. Men's minds become a prey to jealousy and heartburnings. Rights are openly trampled underfoot, and finally, the people, betrayed in their expectations, attack public order and place themselves in conflict with those who are in charge to maintain it. For evils such as these, let us seek a remedy in the Rosary, which consists in a fixed order of prayer combined with devout meditations of the life of Christ and His Blessed Mother. Here, if the joyful mysteries be but clearly brought home to the minds of the people, an object lesson of the chief virtues is placed before their eyes. Each one will thus be able to see for himself how easy, how abundant, how sweetly attractive are the lessons to be found therein for the leading of an honest life. Let us take our stand in front of that earthly and divine home of holiness, the house of Nazareth. How much we have to learn from the daily life which was led within its walls. What an all, perfect model of domestic society. Here we behold simplicity and purity of conduct, perfect agreement and unbroken harmony, mutual respect and love, not of the false and fleeting kind, but that which finds both its life and its charm in devotedness of service. Here is the patient industry which provides what is required for food and raiment, which does so in the sweat of the brow, which is contented with little, and which seeks rather to diminish the number of its wants than to multiply the sources of its wealth. Better than all, we find there that supreme peace of mind and gladness of soul which never fail to accompany the possession of a tranquil conscience. These are the precious examples of goodness, of modesty, of humility, of hard-working endurance, of kindness to others, of diligence in the small duties of daily life, and of other virtues. And once they have made their influence felt, they gradually take root in the soul, and in the course of time fail not to bring about a happy change of mind and conduct. Then will each one begin to feel his work to be no longer lowly and irksome, but grateful and lightsome, and clothed with a certain joyousness by his sense of duty in discharging it conscientiously. Then will gentler manners everywhere prevail. Home life will be loved and esteemed, and the relations of man with man will be loved and esteemed, and the relations of man with man will be hallowed by a larger infusion of respect and charity. And if this betterment should go forth from the individual to the family and to the communities, and thence to people at large, so that human life should be lifted up to this standard, no one will feel how great and lasting indeed would be the gain which would be achieved for society.